Fancy a game?
Technically correct.
Forget all that formal crap about coming at me one at a time. I'll take all you bitches on!
With Tyler Bischoff.
His math's way off.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
The next two words out of your mouth aren't see ya, then the third word will be, oh my God, my crotch, you've punched me in the crotch.
Hello, Empty Thomas and Mac. We had Kathy Olivia yesterday. Go listen to that, lvsportsnetwork.com. But no one's here yet today because the games don't start for another 2 hours. I was thinking, oh, yeah, we'll be the Thomas and Mac. We'll get some people to come by, join the show. But there's nobody here. Utah State's, like, practicing. I could go grab Sam Merrill, but they might get mad at that. Jared, what are you drinking right now?
A Mountain Dew?
Oh, well, it's alcohol day on the press box, so I figured they left you something.
Yeah, they did. It's delicious Irish whiskey and I think orange peel? I don't know. It's quite refreshing.
Does it go good with Mountain Dew?
Everything goes good with Mountain Dew.
Okay. I mean, Thursdays are Jared's favorite day. He gets leftover alcohol from the press box. And yeah, he was going to take today off, but he didn't want to give up his chance at free alcohol, so he's still here. Jared's going to be gone tomorrow and Monday, so it's going to probably be our two best shows ever, aside from that one where we thought you were dead and didn't show up all day.
Yep.
That was a good show. I enjoyed that one. So, Mountain West Tournament today. We're going to have Mark Anderson from the Review Journal join us a little bit later. I do have some Mark Stone Golden Knight stuff to get to. Hopefully we actually get to it today. Didn't get to it the last 2 days. But we will start with UNLV and San Diego State. 2:30 start time today. It's the second game. Nevada and Boise State are playing at noon is when they get going. But if we sort of look big picture at this Mountain West Tournament for UNLV, I think a two-part question, and the first part of it to ask is sort of what does Marvin Menzies need to do to impress in the Mountain West Tournament? Like, what could
Win
he
it.
Do? Win it, is that it? Is that the answer?
I mean, that would be impressive.
All right, next topic. Good job, Jared. But what would he need to do, basically, for people to say, okay, that was a good Mountain West Tournament run? Because if you look at the regular season, they did not beat any of the top four teams. They went 0-6 against them. So beating San Diego State today would ultimately be impressive compared to their regular season. It would have been their best win from the regular season. San Diego State would be their second best win overall. Like, they beat BYU as a top 100 team, but that's their best win of the season. San Diego State would be far and away their second best win of the season. So technically, just beating San Diego State today is going to be impressive compared to the regular season, but I don't really think anyone will view that as overly impressive. I don't think even Menzies would view that as really an impressive Mountain West tournament run if you're the 5 seed and you knock off the 4 seed. So for us to sort of leave the Mountain West tournament thinking that UNLV was impressive or thinking that there would be, oh, they'll carry that over in the next season, I think they have to at least make the final. Obviously, as Jared said, winning the whole thing would be impressive, because then we'd have games next week to cover in the NCAA tournament, or at least one game next week. But I think getting to the final is what people would sort of take as progress going into next season. Because, I mean, listen, you could sell if they make it to the final. You know, they had 11-7 record in Mountain West play. They were 5th in the Mountain West. And then you beat San Diego State. You beat Nevada in the Mountain West tournament. You can sell that. I think you can sell that as a positive progress going forward. Is that going to happen? I don't think it's very likely. What would be interesting, actually, is if Boise State beats Nevada. As I predicted yesterday, big upsets coming for you. That would mean UNLV, to get to the final, would have to beat the 4 seed in San Diego State and then the 8 seed in Boise State. And what would be interesting about that is if you look at New Mexico last year, that's almost what they did. Like, that would be almost identical to New Mexico's season last year, because New Mexico had a very disappointing non-conference year last year. But then they went 12-6 in the Mountain West, and they got the 3 seed. And their path to the Mountain West final, they beat 6-seeded Wyoming, 7-seeded Utah State, and then they lost to 5-seeded San Diego State in the final. Like, they got a break. Their Mountain West tournament run was as easy as you can possibly ask for, and they couldn't win it to get into the NCAA tournament. That New Mexico team finished 19-15, and just like UNLV, their Mountain West strength of schedule was the easiest. They played the easiest schedule last year in the regular season and then got to the NCAA tournament and didn't play a good team. So everyone was pumped about Paul Weir in New Mexico after last season, right? They finished 3rd in the Mountain West. They got all the way to the title game. They're 14-17 right now, and they went 7-11 in the Mountain West. So, like, if UNLV beat San Diego State today, and they get some help, and Boise State upsets Nevada, and they beat Boise State tomorrow, it's kind of exactly what New Mexico did, and there's not that much reason to be excited about it because it's ultimately one win over a team in San Diego State that's better than you, but ultimately not that good. So I think to be impressive, they either A, need to win the Mountain West Tournament, or they need to beat San Diego State and Nevada. Like, those are the two things that they need to do to sort of have any sort of impressive momentum going into next year. So the other part of that question is, does Menzies need to actually do anything impressive in the Mountain West Tournament? Like, does he need to prove anything to keep his job? And I hope not, because this is the worst way to evaluate a coach. If you're the 5 seed in the Mountain West Tournament, how do you do in the tournament? This is the worst way to evaluate a coach, because you have the entire regular season. It's a much bigger sample size. It's much more indicative of what Marvin Menzies is as a coach and where this program is than these next 3 days in the Mountain West Tournament. Like, it would be foolish, I think, of Desiree Francois to make any sort of decision on Menzies based on the Mountain West Tournament. Like, the regular season is a much better way of doing it. Like, I would hope if Desiree Francois wants to fire Marvin Menzies, that she will fire Marvin Menzies regardless of what he does in the Mountain West Tournament. I guess winning it would make that kind of difficult. But, like, if he beats San Diego State and he beats Nevada and loses in the final, and Desiree Francois wanted to fire him yesterday, she still goes through with that, because those two wins are not more indicative of what the regular season is. At the same time, if she wants to keep him and they lose today by 40, I would hope that she doesn't fire him, because the regular season is much more indicative of what happens these next 3 days. So you get to tournaments, conference tournaments, NCAA tournaments, and it's when people start paying attention to college basketball, but it's sort of the worst way to evaluate coaches, because you're in these one-and-done scenarios, and it's not a good way to do it. Like, the regular season is a much better way to evaluate coaches, and I would hope that Marvin Menzies has been evaluated already. Like, I would hope that what happens next is sort of irrelevant, short of winning the Mountain West Tournament and getting the NCAA Tournament. Also, on the coaching front, like, for Desiree Francois, I think she should only make a move if she has a coach that she, like, loves and thinks and knows will take the job. I don't think Marvin Menzies is in a position where you fire him for the sake of firing him, for the sake of change. There's one exception to that, and I'll get to it. But, like, we talked about it earlier this week. This season has been average. Like, it wasn't awful. They had one loss that was out of place, that when they got drubbed by Air Force at Air Force. But
ooh, drubbed.
Other than that, they beat all of the bad teams that they played, and they lost all of the good teams that they played. So it wasn't awful. It wasn't great. It was as average of a season as you can have. And that's, you know, in his third year when he's rebuilding a program, I don't think that's dictates you into firing him. Like, you don't have to fire him for the sake of firing him. Now, the one exception to that is the attendance, though.
Oh, I was going to say, it was that actor's kid that he...
The attendance could be something that forces UNLV to make a change, because I personally don't know, like, how much that's actually hurting them. Like, you've got to imagine it's hurting them in terms of their budget, because basketball is the moneymaker, and there have not been people at the Thomas and Mack this year. But if it's at a point where they're just like, we have to make a change, we have to have people at the Thomas and Mack, then you might have to fire Menzies for the sake of firing him. But if it's not bleeding them dry, you probably can keep him around. But if she's sitting there and she has a coach that she says, yep, this is the coach I want, this is who I think gets it done, then you can go ahead and make the move. Like, Menzies hasn't done anything to make you keep him. Like, you can point to his year this year, his disappointment last year, and the attendance and say, yeah, that's why we're moving on, if Desiree Francois has somebody out there that she's like, yep, that's who I'm ready to move on from. So that's sort of the big picture. Today they play San Diego State. Jared, is it hard to beat a team 3 times in a season?
No.
Okay.
Should about 72% of the time, I believe, it happens.
We should change that cliche to, it's hard to lose to the same team 3 times in the same season.
It's hard to go 1-2 against the same team.
Yeah. It's hard to go 1-2. Yes, it is. We've talked a lot about San Diego State this year. I don't think they're that good, at least offensively. They're not that good. They're pretty solid defensively. They protect the rim. Getting layups against them is difficult. There's 3 teams in this conference that protect the rim well. It's Nevada, it's Utah State, the 2 best teams, and then San Diego State does a good job of protecting it. I kind of think Joel Tomboy is an important player in the sense that he's the guy that should be able to get to the rim. Hardy and Robotham struggle with the length of San Diego State. They struggle with teams that have a lot of size. Tomboy's big. Tomboy's tall. He conceivably should...
The basketball player's big.
He should...
He's tall.
Well, the rest of the team's not that tall. He should conceivably not struggle with the length as much. So I think he's sort of the... That would be the way I would want to see it go, is Joel Tomboy getting to the rim. The problem is San Diego State does a good job of not letting you get there, and Tomboy has the tendency to just, okay, I'll pull up from 15 feet and shoot it from here. So, like, there's a good chance Joel Tomboy starts this game and he's, you know, 2 of 7 and he's taken 5 mid-range jumpers, and it's like, okay, you just can't keep that on the floor, and you end up with Nick Blair, and the offense isn't as good, but the defense is probably better with Nick Blair out there. So Tomboy, I think, is a big key offensively and also defensively, because last time they played, he's the one that drew Jalen McDaniels in the starting lineup. So if Tomboy can do something to slow down Jalen McDaniels, he's probably going to be the most important player. If not, we'll
Tyler,
see.
I got to go close the door. Don't say anything important.
You have to go close the door. What door?
The door to the studio.
Why? What is happening?
I'm just letting you know. Don't say anything important. I got to run across the studio and close the door.
Okay.
So don't say anything important.
What if I just don't say anything at all?
I think then we go to network. So okay. Make sure you keep talking.
All right. We saw Nick Blair in the second half against San Diego State in the last meeting guard Jalen McDaniels. And that's what you'll see if Tomboy struggles. Is you'll see a lot of Nick Blair. Wouldn't be surprised to see Blair early on in this game. I would actually like to see Clyburn guard Jalen McDaniels with starting lineup as opposed to Tomboy. And then you cross-match behind that. But McDaniels is their best player. Clyburn's probably your best bet in the starting lineup to guard him. I think that's something I would prefer to see. But they're going to use all 5 guys to guard McDaniels. They'll stunt at him. They'll help. They'll double. That's probably how they end up defending him. And you force mid-range jumpers that way. And that's why they can beat San Diego State, is if San Diego State, the team that'll settle for mid-range jumpers, they force them into taking a bunch of them, it'll be an inefficient day for San Diego State, and UNLV just needs to hit a few threes. And I've said it a lot. They make a bunch of threes. UNLV can beat just about anybody in this conference. If they don't hit their threes, if they're, you know, 3 of 15, they're not going to beat anybody. They'll lose to San Jose State if that happens. Well, they're done, so that can't happen anymore. But that's how it goes for UNLV. So hit some threes and force some mid-range jumpers, and they can win the day. Are you back, Jared?
Yes.
Good job. What was so important about that door being closed?
People were stopping by and asking, are you on the air?
Who was stopping by and asking if you were on the air?
People.
What did they think was happening? There's a little light on the door that says,
yes,
on the air.
They would point at the light and say, are you on the air?
Are they just shocked that you're in a studio all by yourself?
I guess.
And they're like, nobody left this guy responsible, right?
Well, that's a little mean.
Is it? I thought that was one of the nicer things I've said to you.
Fair enough.
Tenderly Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Make sure you have the Be Connected Sports app downloaded. And if you use Pay Near Me, you can deposit money into your Be Connected app at CVS pharmacies, 7-Elevens, or Family Dollar Stores. It's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
All of the top seeds won in the opening round of the Mountain West tournament.
Boise State beat Colorado State, and then Wyoming actually blew a lead against New Mexico. Vance Joseph had a personal 13-0 run for New Mexico, and then Air Force beat the sad state that is San Jose State. So my Mountain West tournament bracket is perfect. I just need Boise State to upset Nevada today to keep that going. Kathy Olivier, she missed on her women's basketball prediction, Jared. She said Wyoming was going to upset Boise State in the final, and Boise State won by 17.
Okay, well.
Wasn't that close.
But 17 seems appropriate for the Mountain West.
Well, what's funny is Boise State, the women, their closest game in the Mountain West tournament was their first game against 8-seeded Nevada, where they won by 5 points. But they won by double digits yesterday, or 2 days ago, against Fresno State, and then they won the championship game by 17. So Kathy didn't get that right. She did predict UNLV to beat San Diego State today, 72-66, so make your bets based on Kathy Olivier, who I can't remember which game we had her pick during football season, but she nailed her football prediction when we had her on earlier in the fall.
Yeah, she's good.
Good job.
Yamo Pirlo.
Raiders GM Mike Mayock would not comment on what position Trent Brown will play.
So they signed Trent Brown. Adam Schefter originally reported that Brown will play left tackle, with Colton Miller moving to right tackle. But then Vic Tafer of The Athletic, he wrote that based on who he's talked to, he thinks it's going to be the other way around. Colton Miller's going to stay at left tackle. Brown's going to go to right tackle. Trent Brown talked to the media yesterday. He basically said he'll play wherever that helps the team.
So defensive tackle.
Well, what's funny about that is the Raiders' Twitter account, when they tweeted out sort of their announcement of, hey, we have officially signed Trent Brown, their tweet said, we have signed T. Trent Brown, and the T being his position. So they didn't put left tackle or right tackle or even O tackle for offensive tackle. So he might just line up on the defensive side of the ball and play all three tackles this year.
Me llamo Guillermo.
New Mexico's Anthony Mathis went 1 of 13 in a win over Wyoming yesterday.
Definitely better than Noah Robotham.
Avi. Was that it?
That was it. That was all I had. You kind of ruined it with your little fake word there.
Avi?
Me llamo Guillermo.
The Raiders have signed Tyrell Williams to a 4-year contract.
Wide receiver from the Chargers. Oh, by the way, I love Twitter because Jerry McDonald, who writes for the Oakland Tribune, he tweeted yesterday, back-to-back tweets, confirming Adam Schefter's report that the Raiders will sign wide receiver Tyrell Williams. Wrote a story about it. 14 minutes later, he tweeted, gotta love free agency, now hearing Williams deal, not done. It ended up getting done yesterday, but I love the idea that it was done deal. Okay, crap, it's not done. Let's retract everything. Oh, yeah, okay, it's done now. Tyrell Williams is going to be 27 next year. His career, 2016, he had 69 catches, 1,059 yards. 2017, he had 43 catches, 728 yards, and last year, 41 catches, 653 yards. So he's on a downward trend in his career. But for comparison, Jared Cook and Jordan Nelson were the only receivers last year to have more receiving yards than Tyrell Williams that were on the Raiders. I think the big thing that Tyrell Williams coming over does is it pushes Jordan Nelson to your number three option as a wide receiver. What are you putting Marcel Aitman ahead of him?
No, I'm Jalen Richard.
Oh, yeah. But he only plays like, oh, we're losing by three touchdowns. Go out there now. Like, otherwise, they're just going to give it to Doug Martin 45 times.
Doug Martin, run into the back of the line.
Exactly. The Raiders added two wide receivers that are going to be better than Jordy Nelson, which is good. The part of Tyrell Williams that I don't like very much is that they gave him 4 years and $44 million. And I said this about Antonio Brown, but Antonio Brown is a high-end talent, so I think it sort of offsets it. But the wide receiver class is really deep this year, and I think they would have been better off drafting their number two wide receiver rather than making it Tyrell Williams, because his cap hit is going to be $11 million. And if they, let's say they use their 27th pick of the first round on a wide receiver, the cap hit is $2 to $2.1 million. So that's $9 million basically they could have saved, and they're probably going to get the same production at Tyrell Williams that you would have gotten out of, you know, whatever, Marquise Brown, DK Metcalf, whatever wide receiver it is that's at 27, you probably could have gotten the same overall production. So when you have a deep draft class at a certain position, it's probably not best to go out of your way and spend a bunch on two players in that same spot. At least Antonio Brown is sort of high-end talent, but Tyrell Williams just sort of seems replaceable by a guy that you could be paying $2 million instead of $11
million. My stat that I was going to bring to the table, but you already, I think, moved on, was he does seem to, 2 out of the 4 years he's been in the league, he averaged a 75-yard reception.
I saw that he has, like, the last 3 years, he has the second most 75-yard touchdowns in the NFL.
So
there's two players that have more than one, and he's one of them.
So it's going to be a lot of dump-off passes that he just then takes to the house.
Is that how it works? I feel like he usually catches them deeper down the field and then runs it in, which won't happen with Derek Carr.
Yeah, I don't think Derek Carr is equipped to make those sort of plays.
Did you think so? Michael Gelkin of the RJ, what he was reporting was that Tyrell Williams was their number one target in free agency, And that just seems really weird to me that they would be sitting back and saying, yep, Tyrell Williams is the guy we have to add in free agency.
I mean, maybe Gruden legitimately just doesn't understand the defensive side of the ball. And he's just like, no, we need more offense.
Yeah, they do. Why would you sign anybody on defense? It's ridiculous.
We're going to win 80-79.
It'll be wonderful. Games will take 4.5 hours.
Good God. Yay! The Golden Knights have been in a top three spot in the Pacific since December 22nd.
All right, so I've been curious, like, how long have they been in third place in the Pacific? Because what are they? I think they're more than 10 points out of second. They've got a 6-point lead on Arizona. Like, they've been destined to finish in third in the Pacific for a long time. So December 22nd is when they moved into third place in the Pacific. On December 30th, they actually passed San Jose. And they were in second place until January 10th, which is when San Jose passed them back. So since January 10th, the Golden Knights have not moved up or down in the standings. That is 63 days that they have been in third place without moving. The regular season is entirely too long. It's been 2 months and they haven't moved. And they're not going to. I should have looked up what we have, a month left in the season. So it's going to be, they're going to go like almost 100 days to end the regular season without having moved from the third spot in the Pacific. That's ridiculous.
I mean, at least Arizona was in a playoff spot and then wasn't for those magical 2 hours and like, 17 minutes.
It's just, it's crazy how long the seasons are for the NBA, NHL, and MLB. Like, they're all way too long. Cut them all in half and we'll get better results.
Shea Theodore has 7 goals since January 1st.
That is the second most for the Golden Knights in that time. Max Pacioretty has 11.
That doesn't feel like a lot.
Well, they haven't played that many games. Their schedule is cooled down. They played all those games in December, and since then it's been a little bit more relaxed. But Pacioretty has 11. Marchessault has 7, who's tied with Theodore. Brandon Peary still has 6. He's still like up there in terms of leaderboard and goals since he's been here, even though he hasn't played all that well. He's a bit con man. Paul Stadze, by the way, has 20 assists in that time frame, which is 28 games. I swear he doesn't shoot. I don't know how he has scored all year, but that man has more assists than anybody else. But I give you all these stats since January 1st to set this up. Since January 1st, Mark Stone has scored 2 goals for the Golden Knights. Oscar Lindberg has scored 3 goals for the Golden Knights.
Lights FC have the 6th highest attendance in the USL after week 1.
Shout out to Mike Pendleton on Twitter, who he's a Tampa Bay Rowdies fan that makes a fun chart every week with updated USL attendance. So 8,107 was Lights attendance in the first game. Of the teams that were higher than them, it was New Mexico, Sacramento, El Paso, Memphis, San Antonio. 3 of those teams are all expansion teams. So it was the first game in their history. So Lights conceivably could get past them, but New Mexico United had over 12,000. Sacramento was over 10,000, so a couple of teams there with really high attendance. But the importance of attendance is what Jared was just chanting, is MLS expansion. Like, part of Lights FC's purpose is to prove that there's a fan base here that'll support a soccer team. And so far they've done pretty well. They had a good attendance. I think they were 5th last year in the USL in overall attendance. Get over 8,000 for your first game this year. If they can keep that up, if they can average, 7,000 to 8,000 for this season as well, and continue that as long as, MLS expansion doesn't get to 32 and there's no more spots left, there's going to be a chance that Lights FC prove that Vegas is good enough and Vegas can get an MLS team.
Somebody named Eric Brandstrom will make his NHL debut tonight.
You don't know who that is?
Well, I just don't know what that's news.
You completely forgot about him?
I mean, he's gone.
He is gone. The young defenseman, he was sent to Ottawa, part of the Mark Stone deal. He's now getting a shot in the NHL because I guess they cook faster in Canada than they do in the U.S. I hope that he scores more goals than Mark Stone the rest of the season. Like, that would be so great for the brand of the show. I've been doing it with Oscar Lindberg, who still had a Mark Stone. If you got Oscar Lindberg and Eric Branstrom scoring more than Mark Stone, that would just be terrific. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. It'd be too much fun.
My favorite joke right after the Mark Stone trade was, don't worry, guys, you'll get Branstrom back when he turns 26.
Mark Anderson of the Review Journal is going to join us next. Every day, I give you a look inside Bischoff's Briefs. Have you ever wondered why it is so smooth? It is because of Manscaped.com. Whenever Bischoff's Briefs get hairy, the Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped.com cleans it up. Their precision-engineered tools with skin-safe ceramic blades help avoid painful cuts inside Bischoff's Briefs. So head to Manscaped.com and use code ESPN to get 20% off and free shipping. That is code ESPN at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
This is the code that I've written for our year-to-year projections. This is building in all the intelligence that we have to project players.
Okay.
It's about getting things down to one number. Using stats the way we read them, we'll find value in players that nobody else can see.
Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
Mark Anderson from the Review Journal joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at MarkAnderson65. As UNLV, they get ready to take on San Diego State today, their first game of the Mountain West Tournament. Mark, let me ask you this. If you were to pick one player for UNLV that was going to be the key player, who has to play well for them to win today?
This is going to be kind of an off-the-wall choice, but I'll say Nick Blair.
Oh, coming off the bench. Joel Tomboy is going to be terrible, and Nick Blair is going to come off the bench and save him?
Well, I think he gave him the chance to win the last inning with his defense on Jalen McDaniels. And, I think a lot of Tomboy, I think he's going to be a really good player, but his defense isn't there yet. And Blair is just a better matchup than McDaniels. And to me, the game comes down to, can they take McDaniels out of his game and make everyone else beat them?
Do you buy into the idea that in sort of one-and-done type of games, the team that has the best player is the one that's going to win?
I think it's the one who maybe has the hottest player.
Okay, so Nick Blair can do what he did to New Mexico, and he can be the best player today.
Yeah, I mean, let's say Robotham goes nuts from the 3-point line and scores 30 points, that could be the difference in the game. And so, with San Diego State, they're coming in not playing that great, and so. I just think that other than McDaniels, I just Watson's a good point guard, and Hemsley's a really good defensive player. But this isn't as strong a San Diego State team as we've seen in the past.
Is it too simple? Because a lot of times I've watched UNLV this year, and I've come away with this thought. It's like, listen, if they make 13, 14 threes in a game, they can pretty much beat anybody in this tournament. And if they go 3 of 15 from three, they're going to lose to just about anybody. Is it too simple, or is that kind of what UNLV's offense and what their chances of winning comes down to?
I don't think that's too simple. I think that's pretty accurate, and I think that's kind of college basketball these days anyway. And even in the NBA, you see that to some extent. If you get hot from the three, you can be very dangerous. And the Mountain West, even including UNR, is not so dominant that a hot team can't just have a great game and win. And the Wolfpack's kind of stumbling, although he played a great game against San Diego State in the finale. But they've got their own issues coming to this tournament. So I don't think that any game is out of reach.
What do you make of Noah Robotham being left off of the coaches' All Mountain West teams?
I don't know what they're looking at. I really don't. He was second in overall and first in conference play and assist to turnovers ratio. You saw what his defense did in several games this season against the opposing point guard. He made a lot of key shots. I just don't understand it. And it would be nice if they made their ballots public so we could see what they're thinking. And the fact he didn't even make honorable mention is even more shocking.
So the way that I kind of thought about it as far as the coaches go is I have to think, when all these other teams are game planning to play UNLV, Robotham's at the top of the scouting report, isn't he? Like, I've got to think when they're planning to play him that that's the guy that they're like, that's who we need to slow down, not anybody else.
Yeah, him or maybe Clyburn, but yeah, I think Robotham's probably number one. You would think so. So, I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me why they would leave him completely off.
Do you think Justin Hudson will tell anybody what he didn't like about the media's all Mountain West teams?
If he's asked about it, he'll have to give some sort of answer, right? You know, and the crazy thing is, didn't the media give his team like more recognition than the coaches' poll did?
Yeah, so the media, Fresno State had three players on the media's teams and only two on the coaches' teams. But they did get a player on the first team for the coaches' side. They didn't have anybody on the first team on the media side.
Yeah, well, I guess that's his complaint, so I don't know.
But, I assume it's that. He could be mad that he didn't get Coach of the Year, but I feel like that would be foolish because anybody who doesn't think Craig Smith was Coach of the Year, it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were really no other candidates.
Yeah, I mean, were they picked to finish 10th? Is that what they were picked to finish this year?
9th,
okay. So from 9th to a tie for first, a second seed is, that's about as good as it gets.
And they lost their best player in the offseason.
Yeah, well.
Or arguably their best player.
Yeah, Sam Merrill somehow is. Sam Merrill has never lifted a weight in his life, and he's the best player in the conference. It's terrific.
Yeah, crazy, I know.
What do you think, if we look big picture at UNLV, what do you think the future holds for Marvin Menzies?
That's a very good question.
It's a big question. You can go any way you want with it.
I think the people who say they know what's going to happen really don't know. There's one person, and I don't think she knows yet. I think Desiree Reed Francois is still trying to figure it out. I'm not convinced she's leaning one way or the other. This tournament will be a factor. I don't know that it will be an overwhelming factor, but if they do, let's say for argument, say they get to the championship game, it might be hard for her to make a change. But she also has to look at all those empty seats in the Thomas and Mack, and she has to think about putting some sort of spark into the program. And I think she's weighing the progress they made this season, which they did have their best Mountain West finish in a number of years, against the lack of enthusiasm for the program. But it may also come down to, does she have someone ready to go? If she has someone or a list of people she feels confident she can hire who would be an obvious upgrade, then I think she'll probably make that move. If she doesn't feel confident, then my guess is she stays with Marvin. And I honestly don't know which way she's going. And, you know, you hear all sorts of names out there, but I think a lot of that is people pushing their own candidates, maybe boosters pushing their own candidates. I don't tend to put much stock in any of it. So I really think she's struggling with the decision and hasn't made up her mind yet.
If we look at it from the attendance aspect, obviously, we had Rick Pitino rumors, and Rick Pitino is a huge name. People would be excited about that. But is there, outside of that, is there anybody else that they would legitimately be able to bring in that just the name of the coach alone would bring attendance back?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, the Jason Kidd name is out there, but I think he would create curiosity. But I don't know that people would necessarily be clamoring for season tickets. Steve Alford's also another name, of course, who's won in this league, obviously coached at UCLA. I think there'd be curiosity factor with him, but there's also a lot of skepticism with him. I don't, Thad Mott is a name you hear out there a lot. I'm real skeptical that would be a serious candidate, but who knows? But I don't know. Other than Rick Pitino, I don't know that there really is that coach out there. And obviously, he would be the one guy who would do it. But I just don't see that move happening at all.
How desirable do you think UNLV actually is to coaching candidates?
Oh, I think it's still pretty desirable. The facilities are probably the best in the Mountain West. It's a city that's really becoming a big time sports town, although UNLV's kind of getting left behind. But I think a coach could think there's an opportunity to come in here and make the Rebels relevant again. I think everything's in place here to win big time. The thing that obviously works against UNLV is it's not a Power Five, But I can see a coach like what they had with Chris Beard at Arkansas Little Rock, you know, when he took the job for 20 minutes, thinking that this would be a great stepping stone to a Power Five. So that, but it also could be a great place for a coach who's not coaching right now, who maybe has been in the Power Five, who sees it as a way back to one of those schools. So I think it's still a very attractive job.
Do you buy into the idea that Desiree Francois wants to sort of make her mark with a hire, that she's been the AD here for a while, and it's a football and a basketball coach that she didn't hire, it's two she inherited? Do you buy into that she'll make a move just because it's, hey, I need to hire my guy?
I think she's willing to be patient when it comes to that. I think she does want to make that move at some point. I think she would love to be able to bring in her own coach, be there on the football or basketball side. She was ready to do that this past football season and got overruled. So I don't think that's really playing into it for this job, because I think she feels she has a little bit of time to make that decision. You know, you still have another football season to play out, and that could, you know, depending how that season goes, she may be faced with that decision again. So if it's a factor, I think it's a small factor.
Do you think we get any sort of ultimatum like we have with Sanchez, of where Menzies, you know, has to make the NCAA tournament or has to do something next year to keep his job for 2021 or 2020-2021?
Yeah, I suspect if she decides to bring him back, I think she's going to put out a statement laying out some parameters. It may not be he has to make the NCAA tournament, but maybe he has to at least make the NIT and show clear progress. I think that's correct. I would be surprised if she put out a statement without some sort of expectations to it.
All right, we have a very specific UNLV football question to ask you that we ask everybody. Which player had two interceptions against Nevada to win the Fremont Cannon this year?
Oh, it was Javon White.
Okay, all right. You and Ray Brewer have both nailed it this week.
I interviewed Javon White after the game about those two interceptions, so yeah, I would have remembered that.
I would too, but like one of my running theories is that there are no like household names for UNLV football. Even guys that make plays in the biggest games of the year get forgotten. So like, let me ask you this. A couple years ago when they beat Nevada for the first time under Tony Sanchez, do you know who had the pick six?
Now you're challenging me. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was Ryan McAleenan. But, you know, and like that season ended with three wins, so I kind of understand it. But like, that was a huge win at the time. Ryan McAleenan made the big play, and nobody remembers his name. That's going to be Javon White in 2 years, just so you know.
And you may be right. I will say there is one household name, and that's Armani Rogers.
Yeah.
But other than him, you know, Max Gillum maybe can make that argument since he started seven games last season. But other than Armani Rogers, you're right. There really isn't a household. Last season, I'd say Lexington Thomas would have been another one. But going into next season, Armani's really the only one.
It'll be Vic Viramontes, won't it?
Well, it could be. You know, if he plays up to the hype, right? He put a lot of pressure on himself to do that.
I hope so. He is Mark Anderson from the Review Journal. Again, it's at MarkAnderson65 on Twitter. You can find his stuff on the RJ as well. Mark, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on, Tyler, and what you just said is technically correct.
It is always technically correct, Mark. The only thing wrong on my show is Jared.
Yeah!
I'm not getting involved with that, so.
Thanks, Mark. Jared, you wanted to ask the dumbest question.
Yes, I did.
It's like, it's the worst, it's one of, I shouldn't say the worst, you have a lot of bad opinions. It's like the worst opinion you have.
You were saying that attendance matters because basketball is the moneymaker. I have a way for us to make money.
Yes, but also be irrelevant.
We're already irrelevant.
The way they make money is to win and be good at basketball.
Or lose and get paid to do it.
Are you going to actually give your theory? I've been waiting for you to give it for like 5 minutes now.
Nope, we're going to break.
Excellent work.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. Want the easiest way to bet on sports in Las Vegas? Download the Be Connected Sports app for free from the Apple or Google Play stores. Then head to your favorite Boyd location like the Orleans, Gold Coast, or Sun Coast to create an account. And with just a $100 deposit, you'll get a free $50 to wager. Then you'll be able to bet before or during the games you love to watch. Plus, if you use Pay Near Me, depositing money into your account can be done at 7-Elevens, Family Dollar Stores, or CVS Pharmacy. It's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Tyler Bischoff is
the dumbest smart person I have ever met in my life.
Technically correct
Do you want to give your dumb opinion now, Jared?
I think we moved on. Aren't we supposed to be talking about the Golden Knights?
We are, but, you know, that was a good tease.
Oh, we should pull a Texas Southern. I've already said this on the air before.
So, Mark Stone signed an extension for $9.5 million a year.
Bader.
And it is potentially going to cost the Golden Knights some players in the future. Jesse Granger of The Athletic wrote a good story on the cap space situation for the Golden Knights after signing Mark Stone. And I'll just read from Jesse's story. The Stone deal puts the Golden Knights at $82,375,000 as a projected cap hit for next season, which is only $625,000 under the projected 2019-2020 salary cap of $83 million. So, less than $700,000, and they're going to have seven total free agents. Your unrestricteds are Pierre-Edouard Belmar, Ryan Carpenter, Brandon Peary, and Derek Engelin. Your restricted free agents are William Karlsson, Tomasz Nosek, and Malcolm Subban. There's not a lot of money to re-sign those guys. If you look at the unrestricted free agents, I guess you're kind of hoping Derek Engelin retires. Brandon Peary's a con man, so you don't have to re-sign him. Carpenter is a replacement-level guy. And Belmar, he's been a good fourth-line guy, but the success doesn't hinge on him. But he's probably going to be cheap enough that you want to bring that back. We'll see.
Isn't Belmar like 34?
He is very old, yes. We make fun of Derek Engelin for being old. Pierre-Edouard Belmar is just as old. So none of the unrestricted free agents are extremely important players to bring. I mean, England's an important off-the-ice type of player, and if he wants to play, they'll probably re-sign him for something, but none of those guys are, you're not, you know, breaking the bank for him. The restricted free agents, Tomasz Nosek, Malcolm Subban should be pretty cheap, but William Karlsson is the difficult one here, because this last year he agreed to the one-year deal for $5.25 million. They avoided arbitration. This year, he's still a restricted free agent. It could go all the way to arbitration, regardless of how it plays out. If they come to some sort of agreement, if they go to arbitration, whatever happens, he's probably going to be making over $5 million again, even if it is just 1 year. And that put Vegas over the cap by quite a long shot. They can create about $5 million in space by putting David Clarkson on the long-term IR. That would give them $5 million more to work with. But again, that's basically just enough to re-sign Karlsson and nobody else. So they'd have empty roster spots at that point. So Jesse's suggestions basically is to get rid of some guys. And the ones he brings up are Cody Eakin, Ryan Reeves, and Colin Miller.
Aww.
Which one are you sad about?
Ryan Reeves.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, I didn't think you had any attachment to Cody Eakin or Colin Miller. Eakin is due about $3.85 million next year. Reeves is due about $2.8 million next year. Conceivably, Will Carrier can fill Ryan Reeves' role. Carrier is only going to make $725,000 next year. Eric Halla should be healthy and back next year to play center. So you can conceivably get rid of Cody Eakin. If you're losing Eakin and Belmar, you need another center somewhere along the line if it's Cody Glass, or you just bring back Belmar for much cheaper than nearly $4 million that Eakin would be getting. So getting rid of those two, that gives you about $6.5 million in cap space. You put Clarkson on long-term IR, that's $12 million in cap space to get William Karlsson done, to bring in some free agents, or just sign your own free agents to fill out the rest of the roster. But I think that the problem you potentially run into there is if they tried, like, you can't just, you know, trade. It's not like, oh, we'll just trade him right now. They'd probably have to give up picks or something to incentivize other teams to just take the cap dump, which is essentially what it would be with Eakin and Ryan Reeves. Like, you'd have to send those guys and, you know, oh, here's a third-round pick, too, to sort of incentivize them to take on those contracts. And that's what the Colin Miller suggestion is interesting, because Colin Miller, $3.9 million is what he's going to be paid next year.
According to HockeyFights.com, Will Carrier hasn't been in a fight since 2017. I don't know if he can replace Reeves.
Has Ryan Reeves been in a fight? What are you talking about?
I'm just...
Matt, a dude tried to fight Marc-Andre Fleury. Matthew Tkachuk wanted to fight Marc-Andre Fleury, and Reeves didn't fight that guy. Like, the idea that Reeves is here to fight people who get out of line is a complete misnomer, because like somebody tried to murder Marc-Andre Fleury and Reeves didn't do anything about it. The interesting thing with Colin Miller is $3.9 million is a big chunk of money, but Colin Miller is valuable at that price. And if the Golden Knights need to make cap room and they don't want to give up a pick to do it, Colin Miller might be the guy that you move, and you try to replace him with one of the younger defensemen like a Jake Bischoff or a Nick Hague, whoever it is. That's the move you make to try to free up some cap space and make a move. So the two key points that I think you take away is Mark Stone means somebody has to go. It could be William Karlsson, but it's probably not going to be him. It's probably going to be Eakin, Reeves, Miller, some combination. They just don't all fit. And the other part is that Ryan Reeves' deal was a bad deal. Like, they re-signed Ryan Reeves this offseason, and McPhee told everybody, like, they gave Ryan Reeves 3 years' worth of salary stuffed into 2 years. So they're paying him $900,000 more this year than any other team was going to pay him. Now they might have to get rid of that in the offseason. End of the day, Mark Stone is worth it. William Karlsson stays. Other guys are expendable.
Tyler, you're a bitch.